Hello, fellow adventurers. I'm Erica, and welcome to the Adventure On podcast, a place where we share stories of self-discovery and lessons learned both on and off the trail. Welcome back, everyone. I have my friend Jonathan here with me again. We tried to do this one time and my audio messed up, so I'm super grateful that he's down to chat for another hour with me. So welcome, Jonathan.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I live in California's Central Valley. So that's kind of like smack dab in the middle of the state, about an hour 45 from Yosemite. I love the outdoors. I love hiking and I love to get people in the outdoors.
So you live really close to Yosemite. Do you go there a lot?
Yeah. As a kid, my parents would take, I'm the youngest of five. I have four older sisters. And so my parents always thought like taking us to a national park was a lot cheaper than taking us to like a theme park. Back then, I think the entrance fee to Yosemite was like $30 or $40 instead of like $30 or $40 per person. We had a big van. You can load seven people into that and just drive up to Yosemite. We used to go all the time. Like anybody who came out of state, anybody who was visiting, Yosemite was the first thing that we did. So I grew up not like in the valley, but I grew up going to Yosemite a lot, like a lot. And it was kind of crazy too, because I remember my parents, like they would take me up there and they'd be like, you know, half of the kids that you've gone to school with have never even been to Yosemite. And we live an hour and 45 and people come from all over the world. Like how come they don't take the time to like get out? And so like, we're always taking like friends and stuff to go just to experience it. Cause Yosemite's amazing.
Yeah.
Sometimes my dad always had this stupid joke. He's like, you know, some people take all these mountains for granted. That have, like for granted. Cause they're made of granite.
But, that's my kind of joke. I love it.
But Yosemite is a special place. The valley is a little crowded, but it's still a beautiful, beautiful place.
Well, when you're a kid, like getting outside and being able to just explore however you want to safely, of course, is really kind of like going to an amusement park, if not better.
Yeah, it was. I think it was totally better because we would go in all different seasons, not just Yosemite, but in California, there's a lot of state parks and just like local wild areas. It's crazy how populated California is, but how many places you can be and like be alone. But yeah, it was way better than a theme park just to see nature and like take in these like little moments and like learn about the environment. So we were always part of like the Junior Ranger program, which I don't really know what it did, but it was cool. You got a little book and you can like see that you can like write down what you saw, take it to the ranger, and they give you like a little sticker or a pin or something like that. So it just like made us aware of like looking at nature in like a different way and actually like slowing down and paying attention. And that can be hard because as kids, like you just want to like go. And then so they take you to a wild space and they're just like, slow down, like pay attention. Like, look at this, like look at how these rocks are shaped. Glaciers did this. Like, isn't that amazing power? Like hear the waterfall, feel the waterfall. It's just like all powerful. And they really instilled to like take a break and just look at it and let it all in and see how that affects you.
Yeah, to slow down, like press pause and just be aware of your surroundings. Like for a kid, that's huge.
They did that not only like when we went to parks and stuff, but even just, we live in a very like agricultural area and the seasons are very evident here. Although summer seems like the longest season.
Yeah.
But as a kid, I remember we would have like pretty crazy hailstorms and like our street would flood and stuff in like the spring. And summer, we have like different harvesting seasons for like yams, almonds, peaches, apricots, and like all these different things. So oranges. So throughout the whole spring and summer, you have all these different flowers blooming at different times and like different harvesting equipment. So like just taking the time and going out into the orchard and just like looking at that, slowing down. And so they instilled in us to do that everywhere, not just in national parks, but just kind of be aware of your environment and look at some of the little things that you would have never seen before.
Have you noticed that in your like day-to-day life as you've grown up?
Oh, for sure. I was at my friend's house the other day and we were just hanging out or talking in his front yard. I was dropping something off us, and a squirrel came over with like a pecan in its mouth and it was like hopping around on the grass. And then it found a place, dug a hole and put the nut in and then like buried it. And I was thinking like, have I actually ever seen that?
Wow. Like we know. No, I don't think I was thinking that. I was like, I don't think I've ever seen that either.
We know squirrels do that. And like, we might've seen it in nature shows, but that's a nature show in your backyard.
Ooh.
You know, literally in his front yard. And I was like, man, I've never seen that in real life. And it was just crazy. Like, how is that dude even going to find it? Why is he even burying it? Like, we didn't even have a bad winter here. There's no snow. Another thing too, I was on a walk with my wife. We just like walked back from the canal and we're like along this highway. And there was this dead dog. It was either like a dead dog or coyote. And it was like had mummified and like decayed and looked like it was part of the root of an olive tree that was growing by and had like moss growing all over it. Like it looked bizarre. Like both of us thought it was roots, but it still had like all its fur. And then like we stopped and looked at it and we were just like talking about how everything works together to help like decompose and like give nutrients back to the ground. And it was just weird. Like if we had been, you know, totally focused on anything else, like maybe listening to music or just on our phones, we would have walked right past that and not even seen it.
Yeah.
So that totally like affects my day-to-day life when my parents taught me as a kid.
It sounds like they almost instilled this curiosity in you.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a curiosity just to understand things. But I think that might've also been innate, like something that I was born with, but they just helped me cultivate it more.
Yeah.
But it's just a beautiful thing. Like we have so much nature all around us. And if you ever talk to like a birder, like they totally understand that because there's birds literally everywhere. And like, they just are always on the lookout for birds because they're aware of it. It's like, if you buy a new car, you always see like somebody else with that same type of car. Because
yeah,
you're like
yeah,
aware
totally.
Of it. So if you just take the time to like be aware of something or learn a little bit about something, then you'll see it everywhere. And I think that's kind of cool because we think that nature is like, or wilderness is like somewhere far off, but it's really like literally outside our front door. There's ants, there's mushrooms, there's trees, there's bugs that maybe we don't like, but they're there, you know, doing their thing. I mean, literally everything is just right there. And you just got to take the time to look at it.
Yeah. Wow. I love what you just said that like, because I totally fall into this category sometimes of like, I think wilderness or adventure is way out there. Like I have to go to the mountains to find it. But in reality, like walk out my front door, that's nature. That's wilderness. Mm-hmm. Like I may have a house built right next to it, but what's happening on this tree in my front yard and just being curious about it, I might see something that I wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Yeah. And nature and wilderness is super far out there and it is amazing, mm-hmm. you know, like being out and seeing these like crazy peaks or lakes or whatever, but there are squirrels in the mountains. There's also squirrels in your backyard.
Yeah.
And that's all part of nature, but it's fun. I mean, being outside and being in our public spaces is something that I really enjoy. I think everybody should do it.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I'm with you on that. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just the park down the street, like go out there, go sit in the grass.
Yeah, it's true. And then like go out there and if you're curious about something, like, oh, like what is that tree or what was that bird? Like look it up on your phone. Mm-hmm. We used to be like, you have to be an expert to like know what a bird call was or like know what bird you saw, but you can literally type in like blue bird with pink feathers or whatever. And
yeah.
you can find pictures and be like, oh, hey, that's the bird. And then you can learn about it. And I think the more you learn about your surroundings, like the more you want to protect it
totally.
And keep it for yourself to look at, but also for other people to look at too. Not that like you're pushing people out, but like you don't want people to destroy it. So you want to protect it for other people to see.
Yeah. Protect it so that you can share that experience with others
mm-hmm.
because it's so beautiful and so powerful and it's so profound. To have those experiences outside when you stand in front of a peak or experience something that just reminds you of your humanness, I guess. At least that is what it is for me, that I want to share that with people.
Yeah, not only like reminds you of your humanness, but like also how small we are. It could kind of put mm-hmm. all your problems in perspective if you're having like a bad day.
Oh, totally.
And then you like go out and you see something that's like amazing. You're like, wow, that's cool. Like maybe my problems aren't so bad.
Yeah.
Or it just like it reframes your mind to help you get along better in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, that shift of perspective for sure. Mm-hmm. So I know a little bit about you and that you love to rock climb. And so I'm curious, and I want to kind of pick your brain about rock climbing outside. How did you get into rock climbing?
I got into rock climbing in 2020 when the pandemic hit. I had rock climbed like off and on at the little like local arcades. They have like those rock climbing setups and stuff. But I've always loved climbing on things. When I was a kid, we had a ton of trees in our backyard, and I would climb and build what I didn't know what they were called at the time, but I would build like space nets out of like nylon rope and just like make like platforms and stuff. And
yeah,
just
rad.
Love climbing, anything I would climb on. And so my parents, they didn't really like say like, oh, we're going to take you rock climbing. But my sisters had rock climbed a few times in a gym. I had done rock climbing a few times in a gym. And then 2020 hit, and I was just like, okay, maybe I'll just start going outside. And then I just started going outside. I bought some stuff off of OfferUp, like a harness, some shoes, and a rope, which I don't suggest to buy rope from OfferUp.
Yeah.
But I didn't know at the time. And I just started like looking at videos, and, you know, How Not to Highline was like a huge help, the YouTube channel.
Wait. So did you teach yourself everything about rock climbing, basically?
Yeah, I taught myself everything.
Oh, no mentor or anything like that?
Nope.
That is wild.
So
did you start by like top roping then?
Yeah, like I had top roped in the gym. There's an old abandoned bridge that's not too far away from my house, maybe like 30 minutes. And so I just took out my gear. At the time, I had like 2 nylon runners, 4 locking carabiners, and a rope. And I was like, okay, that's enough to build a quad. So I built a quad anchor, and I went out there and I taught myself how to rappel. And I taught myself how to like self-rescue without an ascender, and just taught myself kind of everything that I needed to know. And then I went out to a real wall, and I didn't have any quick draws. So I had made like, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, looking back, super dangerous. Don't do this.
Oh no.
But it's like what I had. And, you know, just had a regular ATC, tube style ATC, and just went out and just kind of taught myself. There's a local crag maybe about an hour away from me. And I just went out and taught myself how to do it. And then I realized I needed quick draws. So I bought a set of quick draws on like Backcountry or something like that. And then just I was self-taught, learned everything on my own.
That is absolutely incredible. I've been climbing for a long time, and I have met a ton of, you know, like a lot of climbers. Every time you're at a crag, you meet more people. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone teaching themselves 100% from scratch. Like, that's impressive.
I taught my wife how to, she doesn't climb on lead. She only likes to top rope, but I taught her how to self-rescue, how to rappel. And also, like, we go through situations like, okay, if I'm knocked out on the route, like if I'm passed out, what are you going to do? And then if you're on the route and I'm passed out as the belayer, then what are you going to do? So like, we run through situations like that. I taught her how to, like, cause I'm about 120 pounds heavier than her. So I taught her how to, like do a soft catch so she doesn't get like yanked up the wall. But I mean, I learned all that stuff from YouTube. Yeah. So like, How Not to Highline, Hard is Easy are like, was my two main sources for like really good information on how to climb. And then just like basic climbing technique videos, like footwork and stuff. But you just kind of learn that when you're out there.
Man, the age of the internet. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I don't feel comfortable. Like I feel comfortable teaching people, like my friends and stuff, but I don't feel comfortable that I'm like, could take a big group of people and like teach them everything. Cause there's so much I don't know. Like at all. But I learned how to trust my gear. I learned how to buy good gear. And I just taught myself. I started with rescue stuff first. Like, that's this smart. Is how you rappel. This is how you get out of a rappel. This is how you like tie stuff off and how to get out of a belay and all that type of things.
You know, what's interesting is I know a lot of ascending things just from canyoneering, but I didn't learn how to do anything other than climb up a route, clean it, come down, rock climbing, because that's all I needed to know, right? Or what I thought I needed to know. I didn't learn anything about ascending or things like that until I got into canyoneering. So it's pretty impressive that you have this wealth of knowledge, probably more prepared for climbing than a lot of climbers are.
So my biggest thing with like the outdoors in general was like, learn a lot so that way you could help yourself and also other people. I grew up watching that show, I Shouldn't Be Alive on Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
So that like struck fear into me, like hardcore. So the first time I went backpacking, I remember I took so much stuff. I was like, I'm not gonna be out here like dying because I didn't bring that extra Snickers bar. But I learned what I can get away with and what I couldn't get away with like backpacking. And even with climbing, like when I first went out, I would literally take everything I had with me. Because you never knew what was going to happen. And then you get more comfortable and you're like, oh, I just quick draws, gree-gree, your top rope setup, and a rope. And then I always, my wife and I would go out, we always carry like a little kit with a tube style rappel device, some cordelette for like making a prusik, and a few extra carabiners to like clip in or whatever, and our personal tether. Like that's always on our harness.
That's smart.
So in case anything goes wrong, we have extra carabiners. We don't have to be like, oh, we don't have enough.
Well, and it's smart to always carry extra stuff. Like I know I've been on the top of a climb and, you know, where a couple climbs pitch out, and the kid next to me this one time, the kid next to me had dropped his ATC and had nothing extra. And luckily, like, I think I had a figure eight on me or something, but I was able to give it to them and teach them like, okay, this is how you use it. Like you need to rappel down. Like, I think it's smart because I still had my own gear to use, right? Like I wasn't giving them my ATC or anything. Like, I mean, you could use like a Munter hitch or something like that, worst case scenario, if you only have like a locker or something like that on you. But if you have a lot of extra things, you can double back and make it a lot more safer. Cause like, I don't really want to be, you know, putting my life on a Munter hitch personally. I mean, I've done it, but I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. I've done it too, just for practice. And like, even talking about a figure eight, like I don't think many sport climbers know how to use a figure eight, but I haven't climbed since probably November 2021. We're in 2022. Yeah. So November 2021. I had like a big boom between like 2020 and like mid 2021, where like a friend of mine, we were going out like every weekend. And then I had a shoulder surgery in December of 2021. And so I haven't been climbing since. And it's like really bumming me out.
This is me just being curious, but like, what was it that made you say, hey, I want to try rock climbing? And then what kept you rock climbing?
Like I said, I've always loved climbing. When I was little, so there's this movie, I forget what it's called. It's like Alaska or something like that. It's about like these two kids whose like dad crashes in the Alaskan mountains and like they have to go rescue him or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like they're using like all this mountaineering gear. They like rappelled and stuff. And there was this stupid scene where like the girl, she's like, just like they do on ESPN. And so me and my sister, we used to like say that all the time. I would like build kind of a harness out of like crappy nylon rope, and she would like lower me off the roof, and like we do that
just as kids.
Yeah. Oh, and I remember too, like the nylon rope like hurt so bad, like I put like a catcher's mitt on my crotch so it like wasn't like digging into me. So like that's all, I've always loved it. I just never had the money or like the time or the know-how. And so I like I said, I found some gear on OfferUp. It was a sad story from why I got it, this guy's gear, because he was going into like search and rescue, but then he got paralyzed in a surfing accident. So he was selling his gear, and I was like, this is kind of, so it was like all brand new gear. And I was sad for him, but I was happy for me.
Yeah. Oh, what and a so, bittersweet moment.
Mm-hmm. So that was really the thing that kept me climbing, was having my own gear and just wanting to do it more and more. And that my wife was willing to go with me, because she loves camping and all that stuff too. So now anytime we go somewhere, we think about like, okay, is there any climbing here? Now let's go somewhere where there is climbing. Because now you experience places in even a more different way. We'll be driving around and we're like looking at the mountains and be like, you see any bolts? Like, you think climbing up there? Like, let's look on Mountain Project.
That's what I do too. I pull on Mountain Project while we drive and I'm like, huh, well, there's a route over there. Totally.
And we found so much stuff that's not even on Mountain Project. Like if you're looking for it, it's crazy how much rock is developed everywhere. There's a local place in the Sierra National Forest called Shaver Lake. That's where we got married, and so we like to spend a lot of time up there. And we were like doing this forest road, and I just looked on my Google Maps and I was like, there's a big feature over here, like let's just go check it out, see if there's any climbing, see if we can get on top of it. Maybe we can set up a top rope on like trees or a boulder, you know, something. Yeah. And so we get there and it's this huge, like, I don't know, maybe like 60-foot boulder. And there's bolts like lined all the way up, and there's top rope bolts all the way around. And I was like, who would have thought that somebody came out here and developed this? Wow. And then like you shake the bolts around, you're like, do they look gold? Do they look good? You know, and then you climb. So it's super cool. Like we were saying before, like just taking the time to look at your surroundings in a different way can open up so much potential for having a new experience.
Oh, totally. That is incredible. And that's incredible that you have your wife to do that with you, because I think that does make a big difference, is having someone to share those experiences with and to discover new places with. That's just as excited as you are, like, yeah, let's go check out this random feature you found on Google Maps. Sure.
Yeah, she's the best. She supports me. And I was projecting this route in the Pinnacles. And we'd gone back maybe like 4 times, and I was kept falling on the crux on the first pitch. And like, she went back with me multiple times, and to get there, it's like 2 hours away from us. So it's kind of like an all day thing. And just that she was supporting me, and she was like, you can do it, you can do it. Like, she's amazing in supporting me. But then like, I couldn't ever get past this crux. Like, it was just, I don't know, mental. It was a big whipper between the last bolt, and it was like a little bulgy overhang, and it was like little nubs you're trying to like balance on and stuff. It wasn't like super technical or hard. The guidebook said it was 5'9", but it felt a little harder and it felt pretty run out.
Yeah.
But I think that's just me not being a good climber.
No, wait, because I climbed a 5, I think it was a 5'9" in the valley. 5 and dime, does that sound like a wall?
Yeah,
does that 5 and dime. Okay, there's a 5'9" there. Do you know what I'm talking about? That kind of goes out on that. There's like a, it's, I guess it's kind of like an arete.
I haven't climbed there. I've gone there to look at the routes, but I remember seeing some of your guys' posts from that.
Yeah, so that route, and I'm like, I feel like I'm a fairly strong climber. Like, I can climb probably an 11. I could probably climb an 11. I don't know if I would lead an 11 right now, but I might take once or twice on the route, but I'll climb it. Oh my gosh, this 5'9" in Yosemite Valley. I was just like, this is crap. Like, this is no way this is a 5'9". So I'm convinced that California's grading systems are a whole nother level. So you probably are an incredibly good climber, and that route is just mislabeled. That's maybe what I'm going to say.
My local crag that's like an hour away, it feels like I'm confident that those grades are whatever. Some people say it's soft, but I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I can climb up any 5'10" that's over there and I feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And like the 5'11s are pushing it a little, it just gets a little more technical and the holds are a little worse. But something about this 5'9", it was just like really big exposure and like pretty run out from the last bolt. And I didn't have a lot of faith in that bolt. It was like this really crappy glue in. And then like, I also like slinged like some feature, and it was maybe like 20 feet of run out. And I was just, it was like totally mental.
Yeah.
I had a panic attack on it. I was like freaking out. Like, I took this huge whipper, and I had never really had panic attacks before, but like my heart was going crazy. And I was like, you gotta let me down. You gotta let me down. Like, I can't do this. So I didn't succeed. I failed. So.
That's okay. You feel like you'll go back again?
Probably not. Like I said, I had shoulder surgery.
Oh yeah.
That's right. Having hip surgery, and then we're moving to Eureka. So that's pretty far away.
Yeah.
It's like 6 hours from us, I think. And so it'll be like 8 hours from Pinnacles. And if we're going to drive 8 hours, we're either going to go into Oregon or we're going to go to Tahoe.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. I'm bummed about it, but
it always can be there. And maybe one day down the road, you know, years from now, you go back and you crush it.
I'm hoping. But that's the kind of thing too, like being in the outdoors, and whether it be like rock climbing, hikes, like, it teaches you to be okay with like your limitations. Like, it'll push you, it'll push you to your limits, and then it'll be like, nah, dude, you're not ready. Like, nature or like any type of adventure like does that in general. And then you either accept that and you like work harder, or it like totally wrecks you like mentally, and you just like get sad.
So how do you find that balance? Like, because it is, I know from my own experience as well, it sounds like with this route in particular, it's really easy in times to fall into that kind of letting that failure consume you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate through that?
I mean, when you have a loss like that in general, I think always getting, not like an easy win, but getting a win right after can really balance you out. Or just like putting it in perspective, just be like, okay, like, I'm not ready for that yet. Maybe I'll be ready for that in X amount of years. And then like asking yourself, like, is that even a goal that I want to work towards? Like, do I want to suffer for that? And sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't, especially like with, I don't know, you can kind of do that with anything, but like talking about the outdoors, like hiking, backpacking, like, do you want to suffer for that goal, or is that not worth it? And you're just going to do like a 5 mile into like a nice location and spend 3 nights there, and then 5 miles out? Or do you want to like suffer that 20 miles to do like a long distance hike? So it's like you have to find what you want to do so that you have that balance of like accomplishing something and like knowing your limits and not feeling bad about not doing something else.
Well, and I think it's just really, you know, everyone's different. For you, maybe that route isn't like, I don't really want to do that route. Like, it was hard, whatever. I didn't get it. I want to focus my energy on this other route that I actually really do want to complete. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Like whenever we talk to people about through hiking, right? A lot of backpackers have no interest in through hiking, and that's totally fine. That's their life and their challenges. Like they would rather hike 20 miles in for a weekend and see all these beautiful places and spend time there versus hiking 260 miles in 3 weeks to see a lot of different places and not spend a lot of time in any of them. And everyone's different. It doesn't mean that you're not good at your adventure. It just means you have different goals.
Yeah. And that's true. Like finding out what your goals, like I know I've heard people say like hike your own hike, but that applies in like climb your own climb, ski your own ski, you know, find out what you want to do and do it and accomplish that. But also like test yourself every once in a while, because you never know if you've gotten more comfortable or confident in whatever you're trying to do, whether that be like a sport. And this used to happen to me a lot of times with skateboarding, because I used to skateboard a lot. And I would like get really comfortable and I'd be like, okay, like I'm going to push it a little bit. I'm going to try a new trick off a different ledge or something. And then I'd get hurt really bad. And I'd be like, okay, don't do that. You know, you just learn what your little niche is and you really pursue it. And that really does apply in like your daily life, like finding out what you're comfortable in and then just like pushing it a little bit in different areas. Not so much that it's like devastating, but just a little bit to see where you're at, whether that be like in your career or anything, just kind of push your limits a little bit, test it, and then see where you really thrive and then like pursue that more.
So what would you say has been like your biggest accomplishment rock climbing?
I got a first ascent. So that was pretty
cool. Shut up. That's huge.
It wasn't a hard route. So if anybody watches How Not to Highline, there's a guy on there, Bobby Hunton, and I had linked up with him and he was like, okay, he's like, I'm developing this area. You want to come out and help clean? And I was like, sure. And so I was just, we were cleaning the area and like making it nice or whatever, kind of developing it, helping him develop. And then I got a first ascent on a route that he had bolted. Like he had bolted it, but he hadn't climbed it. So that's kind of the biggest accomplishment that I've done, I guess.
What did you name it?
I didn't name it. I couldn't think of anything clever. So I was just like, get it.
Dang. Does it have a name or is it just an unnamed?
I don't know. The whole area got pretty wrecked with the fire up near Tahoe.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how that is. I gotta hit them up.
Yeah, let me know. I'll be out there in a little bit. I'll go climb it. Yeah. My friend, first ascent. That's so cool.
It was a fun route. It was super cool because like, that's another thing too. I think as like climbers, we take for granted a lot of the time and effort that goes into developing an area. Mm-hmm. And so like watching How Not to Highline, he did a lot of stuff about like bolting and like developing areas. But then I also listened to the Climbing Gold podcast. I think it was Alex Honnold, and they talked about developing Red Rock and just like how much time and effort like went into developing and like getting rid of choss and like getting down to like the good rock to like develop it. It's a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money. So it was cool to see like the behind the scenes of like, we come to a rock, we take for granted everything's just going to be there. All the holds are good, all the bolts are good. But like the people who develop it, like they put a lot of time and effort into that. And it's cool to see the back end of that. If you know somebody who's developing an area, give them some money because it's a lot of money that goes into that stuff. You think climbing gear is expensive. I think climbing hardware is even more expensive.
Oh yeah. Well, and I think it goes beyond just like the climbing community, taking care of all of the lands, like, you know, like we have the national park system, but like the forests and the state parks and stuff, like people complain about the price. And I totally understand making it accessible and that paying $15 to get into a space is not realistic for everyone. And if you have the money, like support so much because that money is used and that money is needed. And I don't think a lot of people understand the impact $5 or $10 can have on maintaining these beautiful places.
For sure. Pinnacles is a very weird national park. it's kind of situated kind of coastal. Mm-hmm. But I remember all of last year, they had no entrance fees. It was completely free.
Oh, wow.
For everybody. And so every time I would go, they still have the little kiosk. You can like do a self-registration, like fill it out and put money in. And so this past year, my wife and I, no, 2020 was all free. 2020, 2021, like they kind of merged.
Yeah.
So 2020, yeah, it was all free. In 2021, they started having people there at the entrance kiosk or whatever, like actually charging people. And I asked the guy, I was like, so why was it free all last year? And he was like, oh, because it's kind of like a chicken and egg thing. He's like, when we don't have enough visitors, we don't have enough money to pay rangers to be at the stations to man them to charge entrance fees. He's like, but since we don't have anybody collecting entrance fees, like we don't ever have money to buy the rangers to be at the stations to collect entrance fees.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you're saying, it might seem like a lot of money, but it's cheaper than, you know, paying, I don't know how much Disneyland is, but it's a lot more expensive than $15 per car. Yeah. Like you're not paying per person either. So
yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
So taking the time, even if there's nobody there and you're like, oh, we got in for free, you know, like pay it, because that stuff protects the land that you enjoy.
Well, I mean, like, I'm sure you remember what happened in places like Joshua Tree and stuff when the government shutdown happened and like the national parks weren't, there were a few that I think still staffed just because they knew it was going to be really, really bad if they didn't. Like, I think Zion kept staff. Like, I think the state of Utah helped out some of our national parks, but Joshua Tree got completely destroyed because no one was there to take out the trash and no one was there to clean up after people and no one was there to protect these lands. And like, yeah, I think that there's the argument of accessibility and there's the argument of like, well, it's not really our land to be protecting. And if we can all come to this like common ground and common understanding and that same thing that you said at the very beginning of this conversation, like if you spend time out there, you're going to appreciate it more and you're going to want to protect it, not to keep it like away from people, but to be able to share it with more people. I think that's what it really boils down to, is that passion for the outdoors that comes from getting outside.
Yeah. I always thought like if people came to Yosemite, then they would appreciate it and that they would like do stuff to protect it. But then like there's a lot of stuff that happens in Yosemite that makes me lose faith in humanity.
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well, because I have the same experiences whenever I go to Arches or like Zion. People just don't know. They're not educated. I like to take it with a grain of salt and think, okay, there's a lady feeding birds like fruit leather or something like that in Yosemite when I was there. And I had just been in the backcountry for 3 weeks, like not around people. Everyone knows how to respect nature in the backcountry, right? Like for the most part. And I just was like, what are you doing, lady? Stop feeding the bird this fruit leather. And she's like, what, why? It's just a bird. And I like explained it to her. And I think that's like a huge part of people want to get outside and they want to experience the outdoors because, you know, they see it on Instagram, especially now. And they don't understand what it means to take care of it and how to leave no trace. And I think that's how we, I don't know, I hope that people come to the outdoors and get educated and then change the way that they do things. But I guess that's not always true.
Do you find it hard to like do that in a kind way? Like tell people that they're doing it wrong? Because it's almost like you don't want to tell somebody they're experiencing nature wrong. Because that just sounds stupid, you know. But it's like, I don't know, I struggle with that too, like telling people, like, you guys had this thing on your Instagram, it was like, you know, what's one of your pet peeves in hiking, and like cutting switchbacks is one of my biggest things. Like I used to do it as a kid, I didn't know why trails were like that, but I learned and I was like, okay, like they're there to like help maintain the trail so it doesn't wash out, also so it doesn't destroy like nature. Like all these different things go into designing a trail like that. And like you sometimes, like I want to just like yell at people, but then I'm like, okay, they're not going to respond to that,
right?
Plus that's totally going to ruin their experience and make them not even care even more. And I'm not a ranger, so it's not like I have no real power anyway. I don't know, it's like a total thing that goes on in my head, and I'm just like, hey, I don't know, maybe you shouldn't do that. And then if they ask why, then explain, and if they don't, then you just gotta let it go.
Yeah, it is this really difficult space to navigate, because there is a lot of biting my tongue because it does upset me and it gets me really frustrated. And not everyone listens and not everyone cares. And that's the reality. And I love what you just said is like, if you see something, say something. And if there's a space or like an invitation that they like give, like, oh, well, why not? Or they have a curiosity about it, make it a teachable moment. Yeah. This happens a lot with, so like the Utah desert has a lot of cryptobiotic soil, which is this really old biological soil crust that takes years to form and is basically how things live in the desert. It's this weird looking black stuff that's like on the sand and no one really knows what it is and no one really cares what it is until you learn about what it is. And it's fascinating. And I was the same way. I had no idea when I first started getting outside that if I step off the trail in these parts of the desert, I'm destroying it, literally killing this biological soil crust that has taken hundreds of years to form. And so for me, learning that, and like, I think a lot of it was like, oh my gosh, like I've destroyed so much without knowing it. I get frustrated when I see other people destroying things too. And yeah. I remember I was in Arches National Park one time and this lady had gotten off the truck. She wanted to get a picture in this certain angle. And she was walking through this area that was, I could tell that had biological soil crust. And I had to pause and check in with myself before I said anything. Cause I wanted to be like, get on the trail.
Yeah.
Stupid head, you know, but I said, hey, just so you know, like, you need to stay on the trail in this part of the park. There's biological soil crust that can be damaged if you go off the trail. If they want to ask and know more, fine. She didn't. She was just like, oh, okay. And came back to the trail. Like, but I've had people yell at me when I didn't know any better. Yeah. Like throwing a banana peel out. I had no idea when I was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when I first started getting outside, I had no idea. I thought the same thing as everybody else on the trail. It's biodegradable. Why does it matter? And someone yelled at me for throwing a banana peel and like shamed me. And like, you know, luckily it didn't affect my desire to be outside or anything, but I can definitely see how someone that is timid and just getting outside, if we yell at them, that's just going to push them away from the outdoors. And then they're not going to want to protect it. And then the whole world falls apart. So
yeah. And then they don't go again. And then the park loses funding. And then
exactly.
They turn it into a, you know, like a water park or something.
Oh yeah.
Or a strip mall. But it's a very interesting thing to be in the outdoors and to educate people. That's why I was saying like that Junior Ranger program. I think the national parks still do that, where you can like get a sheet of paper and it teaches you to like slow down and appreciate things. But also I had never done this growing up, but take ranger guided hikes in any sort of park that you go to, whether it be a national park, state park, a city park. If they offer a guided hike, take it, because you learn so much.
Oh yeah.
From those people. Cause they like spend their entire lives. A lot of them are like biologists or like ecologists or whatever. And they learn about these different ecosystems and they teach you in like a new way. And they might not take you to like the real prettiest places that you see on Instagram, but they take you to some cool places that probably not a lot of other people see, and you get to learn a lot.
Oh, totally. Which is
very cool. And I encourage everyone to do that. Cause I always thought it was lame. I was like, who wants to take a guided hike with a ranger? Like, he's going to hike super slow. He's not going to go to a peak, but it's super interesting. The rangers are always really cool. So do that.
Yeah. And like, always love the visitor center films that they have. Like, I remember John and I went up to Crater Lake National Park and we watched the film at the visitor center. And we learned about the snowpack. We learned about all these things. Like, I had no idea how much goes into maintaining Crater Lake National Park. It was incredible. And then I learned all that. And I was like, wow, this place is even doper than I thought it was. Like, before it was just this cool, pretty nature spot. And now I know so much more and have so many different levels and layers to understanding that I didn't before. So I love that tip.
I think also people who spend a lot of time in the outdoors, they might make concessions for themselves. Be like, oh, like, I know how to do this in a proper way, you know, or like maybe they're doing something that's not technically correct. And they're like, oh, but I'm doing it in like a good way or something. Like, maybe they are cutting a trail, a switchback, or they're not, you know, they're camping too close to the water, but they're like, it's okay because, you know, I'm out here a lot and like, I know what's good and what's not. But then other people see that and then they're like, oh, they're doing it.
Yeah.
So why don't I do it? And like, I always like have this conversation with my wife, because I used to take pine cones and stuff from like Yosemite, like all the time. mm-hmm. and like rocks and stuff. But then they were like, don't take anything from the national park because you want to, you know, leave it. It's part of the ecosystem. Plus, if you take it, if everybody thinks like, oh, I'm just taking one thing, like that's millions of people yeah. taking one thing from Yosemite Valley. And so that adds up over millions of people over, you know, hundreds of years. They just take so much from it and then there's nothing left. Mm-hmm. So it's like your little choice has a big impact on a lot of different things.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think having conversations like this is essential. I'm not on a pedestal just because I am someone that maybe you saw on Instagram that has a following that like goes outside and does a lot of things. Like I still learned somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. I still make mistakes. I'm still human. And I think as a community, it's our job to hold ourselves responsible, to talk about the fact, like, I didn't know either. Like, this isn't about shaming people. This is about educating, because we all have one thing in common, and that's we love the outdoors and we want to keep it pristine and beautiful and sacred and accessible to everyone. And we only do that by having these conversations. So I appreciate like your honesty today, like talking about like, you know, I used to take pine cones.
Yeah.
And I learned that I shouldn't take pine cones. So I stopped taking pine cones.
Pine cones, sticks, you know, just kind of like anything that I thought was cool looking. Yeah. River rocks. But
yeah, rocks were my thing for a long time too. I love rocks. And then I learned, I was like, if I take a rock and you take a rock and then somebody else takes a rock and everybody takes a rock, then there's no more rocks. So
yeah. And then when you realize like how important river rocks actually are to like how the river flows, mm-hmm. like then you're like, wow, man, I really shouldn't be taking rocks. Cause they play like an important system of like making the river flow correctly and like sediments coming down and like controlling the flow.
Yeah.
Otherwise it just washes everything out. So it's kind of interesting. Put it in perspective.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Mm-hmm. So we're at my favorite question of the podcast, which is, we've talked about a lot of different things from growing up in the outdoors to teaching yourself how to rock climb, which is still blowing my mind that you taught yourself completely from scratch. So all the things we've talked about today, what does adventure mean to you?
What adventure means to me is just kind of like getting out of your comfort zone a little bit. I know this is kind of, I've listened to the other episodes of your podcast. And I think everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people have had the kind of the same answer. So like pushing your comfort zone a little bit and understanding your limitations, but also just going out and experiencing something in a new way. So mm-hmm. I think doing both of those kind of go hand in hand, because you can even like do that with food. You can like push yourself to find new foods, but like finding that new style of food is also experiencing maybe the same vegetables in a different way, or like mm-hmm. the same type of food, like the same meat. You could have steak prepared like 50 million different ways, but like going out and saying like, well, how do they prepare it in this part of the country or this part of the world? Like, let's go experience that, and like pushing your taste buds to a different level. But that's what adventure means to me, just pushing yourself and experiencing things in a new way to like change your perspective.
Yeah. And I think we talked about this earlier too, like just noticing those little things and, you know, it doesn't have to be this extravagant adventure. It could be just right out your front door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then I guess I would change my answer to adventure means finding things that help change your perspective.
Is that final answer?
Yeah, final answer. Adventure means finding things that help change your perspective.
Right on. So if people want to connect with you on social media or whatnot, how can they get in touch with you?
I'm on Instagram, LeeOscar432. My account's set to private, but if you want to follow me, like, I don't care. A lot of people can follow me. I might not follow you back, sorry, but LeeOscar432 is where I'm most active. But yeah, hit me up. I live in California, moving to Eureka.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It was a blast talking to you again. This mm-hmm. is our second round. I feel like I learned even more this time though. So I'm glad we got to chat again. And yeah, thanks for coming on the pod.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I hope today's episode helped you find the inspiration and courage to get outside and define your own adventure. If you like the podcast, please don't forget to subscribe, follow, and leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. I'll be back next week with more stories from the trail. Until then, adventure on!